Hello and welcome to Simcast, the Higher Education Simulation Podcast. My name's Lawrence Hill and I'm the chair of the Simulation Group in the School of Health Sciences at UEA Norwich.
Hello everyone, my name's Tony Jeremy and I'm the Academic Lead for Simulation-Based Education at UEA Norwich.
Today we are joined by David Aziz. Hi Dave. Dave is an Associate Professor in the School of Medicine at the University of East Anglia and we're going to be talking about simulation in the context of practice-based learning.
If you enjoyed the video, give us a like. Equally so, if you didn't like the video, give us a dislike, but let us know in the comments why, because we're always keen to improve. To keep up to date with all things simulation, hit the subscribe button and don't forget to check that notification bell. And Simcast is now available on all streaming platforms, so just search for Simcast through your preferred provider.
Okay, Dave, could you tell us a bit about yourself, please? What is it that you do and what relation does that have to simulation-based education?
Hi. So, first of all, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure.
Welcome.
I'm David Aziz. I'm an associate professor in medical education. I'm the director of placement at the Norwich Medical School. I look after a range of programs spanning MBBS, physician associate, clinical psychology. I oversee all things linked to placement there. Where simulation sits is it's a good question in the sense that I am philosophically aligned to the idea that experiential learning is more of a spectrum. So obviously there's an experiential learning aspect to simulation as well as placement. There's a lot of overlap and there's a lot of interaction between the two. So this sort of informs my interest in simulation.
Well, that's a great place to start. Thanks for that. And I think we're going to definitely be digging into that throughout this episode.
I like the idea of the philosophical approach, but probably also the practical approach of simulation and practice-based learning as well. So it's going to be interesting.
We said on a previous episode that there is some uncertainty about the terms that we use in simulation. So to you, from your perspective, what does simulation mean in the context in which you work in those roles you've just described?
I think simulation, pure simulation by itself, outside of an educational context outside of an educational intervention, is to me is anything without a patient, anything that you have to recreate a scenario without the patient, without or outside of the what we, let's call it normal clinical environment. Uh-huh. But as we've discussed previously, good simulation would be structured, would involve sort of brief and debrief at the end. Mm. And to be honest with you, that is the same with a good placement. A good placement needs a good introduction and a good debrief at the end. And I would also add into that an opportunity for sharing learning, even with the instructor or with the educator in the incident. In that instant. So, you know, there would be an opportunity for the students to share learning with each other and with the educator, whoever that is.
Do you think those definitions are shared amongst the people that you work with, both at the university, but also in terms of practice providers?
I haven't asked, but I would suspect less likely.
Yeah. I think this is one of the big problems is the term simulation to different people means so many different things.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen it. I mean, you know, Lawrence and I were part of our professional relationship is we lead on a module with the university and the Gulf.
The University of Sharjah.
University of Sharjah. Yeah. When we talk simulation over there, their understanding is very different it's slightly different from what we understand.
Yeah.
Some people view simulation as something that's very high fidelity, something that's almost lifelike, and some people view simulation as something that is more around the principles of simulation. I mean, I like, you know, the example that you do with your teaching with the towel and the phone. So that to me, that is good simulation, even though it's not high fidelity. However, some people might view that as, well, that's not simulation, that's teaching.
Yeah, I think you're right. So there's definitely a perception, isn't there, from some people that unless there is a high degree of technology and the illusion of realism and authenticity, that it's not simulation. So that's interesting.
And I've been in discussions where a debate has sparked up is simulation is learning or simulation is teaching while placement is not. And that doesn't really fit, because to me it's sort of, you know, it's a puzzle. It's part of the puzzle. It's very difficult to, you know, where does one line start and where does one line and the other stops. And particularly the fact, you know, a lot of teaching in placement can take place through simulation anyway. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting to say that you're kind of philosophically aligned to the idea that simulation sits within the kind of broader context of practice-based learning. And that's certainly something that on our simulation instructor course, we kind of touch on at a fairly superficial level, really. Mm. But that we can frame any kind of practice-based learning experience, whether that's in clinic or in simulation, as falling under Kolb's experiential learning cycle. And being an opportunity for experiential learning.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, because take the student out of the equation. There's still that the expectation or all the components for that cycle to take place, whether it's simulation, whether it's placement. Mm. And in fact, you know, if we're thinking high fidelity is what we're aiming for, then that should mimic very closely placement. So the student shouldn't be able to notice the difference, at least while they are within that simulated experience. Mm.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's a utopian, unachievable goal.
Yeah,
idea that the learner would not notice, but it is in effect what we're sort of almost kid ourselves that it's what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Maybe we need to move the goalposts, and actually not high fidelity is what we need to achieve. It's rich learning, however that's delivered.
And you know, the paradox here is, if high fidelity or extremely high fidelity is what you need to achieve, then you shouldn't tell the students that this is happening.
which would be contrary to all of the psychological safety.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, we digress a little, but the only mannequin that I've ever seen, there was only ever once when we had a simulator, a rep come to show us this pediatric mannequin. I think it was supposed to be like kind of a 3 or 4 year old.
It was leaning back, wasn't it? And just it was like leaning back and looking at you.
And it turned its head and it had like warm skin, but it was the only time ever that in a simulation using a mannequin, there was a part of my brain that went consent. This patient, there was an automatic reflex in my head that just wanted to say, hi, I just need to feel your wrist. And I kind of caught myself and its pupils like tracked me. And I was like, oh. So I think it's possible, but then there's always the part of you that says, I know that you're motorized, you're extremely clever, but you're motorized and you're not a real human. And I wonder how that affects what we can learn from a practice-based learning context, you know. What is it that is different about learning in simulation compared to learning in practice, do you think?
I think that's the difficulty in that question. It relies heavily on what we're trying to teach and what the actual experience is, what the actual educational experience is. I think the fact that a student is aware, the awareness of the students of their surrounding might change. So they know that this is real life, let's call it, but this is simulated. They might have safety and say, well, you know, if I make a mistake here, I'm going to look stupid in front of the educator and my students, which is in itself high pressure. But in real life, well, you know, if I make a mistake, it has different implications. Mm. So I think these are the things. I think that's a difficult question to sort of break down.
But they are different though, aren't they? The things that you do learn, you know, but we're still trying to achieve a certain aim. What a thought that occurred to me was that in practice, you know what you're trying to do as a practitioner, and a huge amount of the learning that takes place is unintended learning outcomes being achieved. Whereas in simulation, you tend to know what you're trying to learn if the simulation is well constructed, because you've got clear learning outcomes. Mm. But the minority of the learning is unintended. So for me, there's this kind of relationship between the two, whereby, you know, they complement each other rather than sort of rather than being obvious replacements for each other?
Absolutely. You know, the I mean, I can't remember the quote exactly, but there's you know, for, I think it's the AME, Association of Medical Education of Europe, Medical Educators of Europe. There's a lovely quote in their guidance on experiential learning where it says, well, you know, there is a lot of rich learning that takes place in practice outside of the learning outcomes. And so there's a lot of sort of, like you said, like the hidden curriculum type of stuff, a lot of the unintended learning outcome that cannot be replicated in simulation because simulation is very structured and is engineered. So you can't really be, by definition, you are trying to isolate or you're trying to remove these things unless you put them in deliberately. Mm-hmm. But if you put them in deliberately, they're no longer hidden learning outcomes or they're no longer hidden curriculum. So you are losing that. You know, for example, I like this. So when I first qualified, so I'm a pharmacist by trade. When I first qualified as a pharmacist, I was very hesitant to answer the phone because I've never practiced that before. Mm. But had I been on the ward or had I been placed in the pharmacy and been able to sort of hear enough people answer the phone, I might have my reaction might have been different. A lot of things that you can't put learning outcome to. Mm. You know, how do you feel after you talk to a cancer patient? That's a very difficult learning outcome to write.
Mm. Yeah, and it's also not one that you can easily replicate in simulation because unless you're having people that are coming, you know, fresh from a diagnosis of, you know, of a cancer diagnosis, yeah, and then saying, right, we're going to use you in a simulation, then it's really no longer a simulation, but it's something else altogether. Before we move on, I think this is such a rich kind of question that I want to throw it open actually to everyone that's listening and say, you know, what do you think are the things that we learn in simulation compared to in practice? What can be learned in simulation but can't be learned in practice and vice versa? So if you're kind of toying with some of these ideas, please just drop us a comment and let us know what you think. But yeah, sorry, Dave, you were saying.
Can't remember now.
I interrupted.
Oh yeah, sorry. I was going to say, but you know, we have seen in consultation skills teaching, when we have a simulated patient, students can get really emotionally invested in it and can start tearing up and start sparking up memories. So it can get close, but students will always know that this is a simulated scenario.
Yeah.
Even if they become heavily emotionally invested in it.
I suppose it's similar, isn't it? If you watch a film, you know it's not real, it's a film, but it doesn't stop that level of engagement, and that's what makes it a good film. And I think that's what makes a good simulation.
That's what we're aiming for, isn't it?
Yeah.
That emotional buy-in.
Not necessarily tears.
But that development of that fiction contract and emotional buy-in, and just, and again, everyone knows it's not real, but you still can provide that environment where you do get a level of realism. But there's clearly differences, isn't there, between practice, learning and simulation. Now, one of my big concerns is I don't think everyone sees that and understands that and then sees practice learning or simulation as a replacement for practice learning. So where do you see simulation fitting in practice-based learning?
I think that's a good question, and I think it's going to be a very important question for the next few years. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen the NHS workforce plan talking about increasing the numbers of healthcare professionals. Mm. So the question there is capacity, because if you are increasing the number of the number of healthcare professionals, where are you going to place them? Where are you going to train them? So the answer will always come back to, so we can't control the environment, the hospital environment or the practice environment, but we can control simulation. This is within our gift. So maybe we can invest more in simulation, or maybe we can put more students in simulation. The difficulty here is, without appreciating the difference between simulation and practice, we can end up in a very dangerous ground. I mean, you know, one question I like to ask is, or wonder about is, you know, And would you expect a midwife who has never delivered a patient and only practiced delivering patients on a mannequin, would you expect them to deliver your baby? Would you be happy with that?
Yeah, if you look at it in terms of achieving core competencies, if you had one student that only had practice experience and one student who only had simulation, they might both achieve the competencies needed, but their experiences would be probably very, very different.
Yeah, it depends on how the competency is written. It depends on how the learning outcome is written. The learning outcomes can be achieved in both. I think the question that you've highlighted to the audience, I think there are some learning outcomes that can are very difficult. I think there's some learning outcomes that are much more suited to placement than there are to simulation, or they can be written that way. I mean, a lot of clinical skills can be practiced in simulation. There's been some, you know, the studies have found that learning outcomes can be met in both. And also, there's been a study recently in Australia that have looked at the different, you know, what you do when to put in simulation and when to put in clinical practice. And they found that if you introduce students to simulation first before clinical practice, that sort of tend to bode well in terms of their clinical skills and clinical competency. So I think there is definitely room for both at specific time. The interchangeability is not there as much as we would like to think when we're trying to plan for capacity. I think so, but there will also be necessity to have clinical placement before simulation. So I think we need, and this is why my philosophical setting is, this is a dynamic system of experiential learning that we need to explore dynamically. We need to, and not interchangeably, but dynamically. So the suite of experiential learning that student is exposed to needs to touch upon, or needs to have components of simulation in it, and needs to have components of placement.
But the cynical side of me goes, well, what's the drivers? And often it's capacity, finances, and perhaps that then doesn't marry up with the philosophical idea of them being dynamic and interchangeable. So we've got conflicting priorities sometimes.
No, absolutely. And you know, how do you square the circle? It's a difficult one.
It's interesting as well, because it shifts the burden of responsibility for the education of healthcare professionals more greatly towards higher education. And kind of away from the clinical practice setting as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
By promoting the greater use of simulation, what it says is that actually it's the academy's responsibility rather than it's the practice environment's responsibility, which is where ultimately these learners are going to be situated when they qualify.
Yeah. So I think there are two points here. One of them is we are seeing practice environments or placement providers providing simulation for either their workforce or our students. So this is happening in practice because of that shift. They're seeing actually we have to manage capacity. So as a natural response, they started developing their own simulated environments. I mean, also they developed it for their own, because of the necessity for simulation in terms of having a safe place to practice and safe place to learn. So they have provided that for their workforce and in turn provided our students. The other thing is, going back to your question about the worry about overwhelming simulation, there's still going to be the necessity of what we talked about earlier about the hidden curriculum. That's not going to be addressed in simulation.
No, less so. Certainly, less, yeah.
Yeah, the attitudes, the behaviors, a lot of the stuff that needs to be picked up in practice when role modeling in simulation is very different from role modeling in practice. In a simulated environment, you're seeing the role model in a specific way, they take on a specific form. While in practice, they're a lot less guarded, so they will show you, you know, I'd like to say more authentic role model.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a hypothetical question now. You've got a learner who's only learned in clinical practice, a learner that's only learned in simulation, and a learner who's had a combination of the both. Who do you think is the richer learner? If they were all, you know, if you could put them into substitute tests and they were the same level of kind of competence.
It's a very difficult question.
Can I rule one out?
Okay.
So let's make this a binary choice. So I'm gonna assert that the learner that has learned exclusively in simulation is not the practitioner that I want to treat me or my family.
But the reason I put that in is because I am aware in certain parts of the world that this is a strategy which they're now looking at, fast-tracking healthcare professionals doing VR only and then having maybe one simulation session at the end before they then go into practice. So it is potentially happening.
As a registrant?
Yeah.
Oof.
That's... Interesting.
I think we've all answered that question.
You see, I when I learned, so in pharmacy back in the day, when I did my pharmacy degree, I only had one day of placement. Right. Everything else was simulated. Okay, not good simulation, but it was simulated. Okay, so we did all the dispensing.
Sans patient.
Yeah, everything sans patient. That's a good way of describing it. It is a personal reflection. I think it is a struggle because we had to make up for the lack of placement by working over the summer. So that's where I got all of my sort of my confidence and all of my expertise to deal with the early years of being a pharmacist. I didn't get it from I got a lot of it from the simulated stuff within the university, but to be fully confident to see, okay, because this works now, how do I know it's going to work outside? That question is not answered for me.
No. And that's part of that transition into practice, isn't it? And that's always going to be, no matter how well prepared you are, that's always going to be a difficult transition. Just reflecting back on the question that you asked earlier about, how much confidence would you have in a midwife who'd only ever practiced in simulation? I think midwifery is probably quite a good example of a profession that has very clear stipulations about number of actual births that have to be observed.
Which is getting harder and harder to obtain.
But I can also contrast that with an experience of talking of university days, a colleague of mine who qualified as a paramedic having never been to a cardiac arrest in practice. So I think it's quite well established in the literature that there is a power of simulation, but I would also argue there is a moral necessity to simulate things in practice in order to ensure that people have something resembling a kind of an experience of education which is consistent with their peers. What experiences should a medical school graduate, a paramedic, a midwife have had by the end? And the only way that you can guarantee that is through artificial or simulation-based, practice-based learning.
Yeah. Sorry.
Clinical placements can be very, very different, can't they? In a cohort of anything from a reasonable-sized cohort, the individuals and their clinical experiences will be vastly different.
I think so. So for me, where simulation works really well, practically, is when you have scarcity of a particular competence or particular experience you want the students to have.
Rare events.
Yeah. For example, if you have something that occurs 1 in 1,000 hours, then you can't, and the students only has 1,000 hour placement in the course, hypothetically speaking, in their degree, where are they going to do it? So I think this is where we have an obligation to provide something through simulation.
That's the word I was looking for, obligation. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Similarly to giving the students the confidence to do something when they go out in placement. Again, we have an obligation to, rather than throwing them in the deep end, we have an obligation to get the students to know that, well, you can do this before you actually can go on the ward or before you can go in the clinical environment.
So does that mean then that there is not necessarily the space for simulating of routine events? Is it worthwhile, in your opinion, providing simulation-based learning experiences that reflect routine practice? Would it have been beneficial for you to have had simulation training as a pharmacy student on taking a professional phone call?
Yeah, that would have been good. Yeah.
So we focus on the rare events in simulation, and we do that a lot. That is a common theme.
Simulation is historically steeped in, isn't it?
Anaesthetic emergencies for me in my profession, anaphylaxis, life-threatening asthma, cardiac arrest, and we know that these represent probably closer to 2-3 or maybe 5% of caseload. So what bearing do you think it has if we focus our simulation effort on rare events, and how will that then relate to the student's experience of going out in practice?
I think simulation does a lot of stuff that outside of scarcity. So, having a safe environment for the students to practice, you know, another practical advantage to simulation, it reassures the placement providers that our students are competent. So we're not going to send them students that are going to mess things up. So how do I demonstrate that? By telling them, well, they have been in simulated environment and they fared well. So no, I think, and again, going back to the idea of simulation is not there to just address capacity. Simulation is there as a part of the full, a serious learning package that we provide that has a serious experiential learning strategy. Simulation has to be part of that. They have to learn a lot of stuff as in simulation while they're here. Notwithstanding them needing the context, so they get the context, but they have a go at things before they go out in practice, and then they can go out in practice. I'm not fully wedded to the idea that everything has to be done in simulation before practice. I think there are exceptions, but there is a general attitude or there's a general sort of set of skills that you need to have, that transferable skills that if you have it, they can be done in simulation, then done in practice. Not necessarily every single thing after that has to be done this
kind of a base threshold.
Yeah. So for instance, you know, this consultation skills again. So let's say, how do you greet a patient, right? You can greet a patient in different settings. So, you know, a pediatric patient, a mental health patient, a stroke patient. I don't need to introduce you to every single one of them before you go out and practice, but I need you to introduce it to the principles, the idea. You get comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with that. The hospital is comfortable with that. Then I can send you out. And then you can try the different things. But I think there's definitely room. And I think it'd be a nicer, richer experience for the students.
So does the responsibility lie with the education provider, or does it rely with placement when it comes to practice-based simulation? Is it the education provider who's writing that into the curriculum and then informing placement?
I've not thought of that, but I think we have a responsibility to make sure that when we send our students, that they are safe, and also the dichotomy between provider and university, I think, is something that we need to sort of shift away a bit from, because if we do that, it becomes transactional, which is not what we want to do, particularly in receding capacity.
No, but then again, if we're looking at having an equitable experience for our learners, we then have to look at all of the variability. You probably have less variability in higher education context than you do in a placement provider. So it's then working with those different providers to go, well, this is the baseline, this is the standard we get everywhere. So that
and that can be addressed by having a strong course leadership team.
Yep.
Having regular communication between the different providers and the school. So these things can be addressed. There will always be variability. We cannot ignore that. But that is part and parcel of the learning experience.
Okay, great. So if you had...
I was going to say, this is a nice philosophical question to ask.
Yeah, it is.
We've been quite philosophical, so I think this would be a great one to finish with.
So if you had unlimited resources, what would you do?
It's a nice thought in terms of the mix
of practice. I know it's not. We're not going to get there because we're constrained by lots of things. But what would
I think? What it does though is
what
optimum looks like helps to recognize where the potential shortfalls are.
I put it simply. I would let the curriculum design inform how we use the different things that are disposable in terms of experiential learning, whether it be in simulation, whether it be in part task, whether it be in simulated patients, whatever, and whether it be in placement and all the different types of placement, I would do that. So I would let the educational design inform that, and you know, look at the learning outcomes, look at how they're best addressed, look at where the gaps are, what's the hidden curriculum, and where I mean, obviously hidden curriculum is difficult, but where can I do it, where can I achieve it, and how can I facilitate the attainment of the hidden curriculum.
So I guess in a utopian, idealistic world, that hidden curriculum would become reduced, perhaps not eradicated, because...
I would say no. I think it will go up, because the students will have the freedom to follow their heart if they want to. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Because, you know, if I have unlimited placement and the student wants to learn more about how to deal with, upset patients, for example, they will have, aside from the learning outcome linked activities, they will have the freedom to go into the hospital. But if they felt they're not comfortable with it and they wanted to revisit the simulation, they still have that. So we prepared them with the simulation and give them.
So a learner assessed competency.
Learner led
competency.
Learner led. Yeah, I would say so. That's how I would do it. I'm in favor of apprenticeship, but again, also, in an apprenticeship model, there's nothing wrong with the master and master and apprentice model. There's nothing wrong with the master saying, well, actually, you know, I think you need to work on this. Mm. So this is a VR package. Use that VR package to perfect your skills and come back. And there's also, guided VR packages, and you can, there's coaching linked to it. Lots of stuff that can be done.
Mm. I like this idea, though, of trying to close the gap between the intended learning outcomes of a simulation and then inviting learners to share their experiences of things they've learned from the hidden curriculum.
Mm.
So, you know, it's that, how often do you hear in simulation, oh, that's just not how we do it in practice.
Mm.
And actually intentionally writing that into to debrief to say, okay, so we talked about, you know, optimal practice here today. What is where is the gap between what we practice today and what you've learned about how to practice?
I think that's a necessity, because how else are you, you know, what are you going to hang the gained learning in simulation, what are you going to hang it on? Because if they don't have the sort of the running theme that looks at the totality of the learning experience, they don't have anything to hang it on. It becomes removed, and there becomes less appreciation for variability and the messiness of clinical practice.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
We could talk about this for hours.
I think we might have to have Dave back. Yeah. If you'd like to come back, Dave, we'd love to come and get you on the pod again. Yeah,
that'd be great. Thanks. Because I've got a question for you next time.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, you want to answer that now, don't you?
That feels like a real teaser.
It's up to you. How are we for time?
I think maybe what might be different would be for you to pose a question for our listeners to think about. And we'll come back and we'll discuss.
And what we'll do is we'll discuss the question. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you want to ask it?
Yeah, what's your question?
Ask it now, right?
Yeah, ask it now.
So obviously, simulation is a difficult experience for students, particularly if they've not, if it's something new for them. So how can placement better prepare students for simulation?
Oh, that is a beast.
That's okay. A great question. So if you think you know how practice can better prepare people for simulation.
Or should it?
Let us know in the comments below. That's a great place. And what we'll do is we'll come back and we'll see, we'll have a session on is the tail wagging the dog.
Very good. Dave, thank you so much for your time coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for listening. And we hope to see you on the next one. Bye for now.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.